From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Before I even tell you the problem that this episode is about, I want to tell you the problem behind the problem. The sub-problem. The problem problem. The problem.
You had phenomenal players generating tremendous amount of revenue, so you didn't want to disrupt them. And when you did disrupt them, they'd say, "Did you see my numbers this week? Let me get back to work. You're wasting my time."
Hear the problem? Let me play you another quote.
So while revenue was explosive, it was easy to ignore where some of the culture issues were going to be a problem down the line.
Sensing a pattern?
But as long as revenue kept coming in, we decided to ignore where there were certain issues.
This, by the way, is Mark Zablow. He's the CEO of Cogent Entertainment Marketing. We talked for an hour, and in that hour, as we explored the many challenges he's overcome in his company, he just kept bringing it back to revenue.
Revenue just kept driving the decisions we were making.
You may have heard about this, but let me just put a fine point on it. Cogent Entertainment Marketing was making a lot of revenue. It's an influencer marketing agency, which means that it helps connect clients such as Corona, Procter & Gamble, and DirecTV with influencers like celebrities and artists and so on to help promote the brand's products through social media, at events, and elsewhere. And Cogent was early to this game, which meant that it had big clients and major deals coming in early and often, which sounds like a good thing, but, well, you know.
I was very blind to it. What I was able to see, I didn't want to admit. Again, when revenue is good, you kind of hide a lot of the problems under the rug.
As the old saying goes, be careful what you wish for. It might actually come true. So yes, the problem behind the problem was revenue. But the problem, the thing actually festering right under the surface there, the thing that revenue was covering up, was a bad culture. Mark wasn't developing as a leader. His executive team wasn't talking to each other. His junior employees were feeling jerked around, and it was a mess. And eventually, it reached a head. It forced Mark to make a series of decisions that would decide the fate of his company. Would he just keep chasing revenue and let his company culture turn rotten? Or would he have the strength to change everything, including himself as a leader, how his executives work together, how the company operates, and yes, even how it thinks about revenue? Could he do it? We're going to find out right after this break. Want to hear more great stories from entrepreneurs, founders, and creative thinkers? Check out the Proposify Biz Chat, a podcast hosted by Kyle Racky. He's the co-founder and CEO of Proposify, a really useful business proposal software platform that helps you close more deals faster. Each week on the Proposify Biz Chat, Kyle interviews other business adventurers about really practical things like how they handle sales, marketing, growth, operations, entrepreneurship, innovation, and technology. I just listened to an episode about product demos, and I loved the point that they make about how you can't just be an answer taker. You can't just wait for clients to ask you questions. You have to know their needs in advance and take control of that demo. It's great advice. For more like it, listen to Proposify Biz Chat now at proposify.com/podcast or subscribe on iTunes. All right, we're back. So before we get into the whole sour corporate culture thing, let's see where this started, because it was a lot sunnier at the beginning. Around 2007, Mark was working at an advertising agency doing big deals like Pepsi Super Bowl commercials, and social media was kind of in its infancy back then. Twitter was a year old, Instagram wouldn't exist for another 3 years, people still had MySpace accounts, and Mark started experimenting with connecting brands directly to celebrities. He realized that brands could get their messages across like this at a fraction of the cost of a big-time commercial. The celebrity could just post a photo of themselves with a product or do something that would create a little news on celebrity news sites, and the brand would just have a nice little boost. So for a few years, he toyed around with this idea, doing little deals here and there inside the ad agency.
And then right about 2010, the big aha moment came when Best Buy approached us and said, "It's Monday night. We have a phone promotion releasing on Friday, and we need to get the word out immediately." With not a lot of time and resources, we came up with an idea to see if maybe we can work with celebrities to promote it on their Twitter account. Hence, one of the first paid tweet programs, done in the marketing space.
By 2011, Mark came to a realization. He was onto something. People were willing to spend lots of money for this. He was at a big ad firm that had all the connections he needed. And yet,
I was in a very lucky position where the business we were doing, as big as it was microscopic to the firm we were a part of.
This is one of those perfect moments. You hear about them from time to time when someone inside a giant organization comes up with a great idea, an idea that makes lots of money, and yet not enough money for the giant organization to actually change itself to accommodate. It's just money sitting there waiting to be taken. So Mark worked out a deal. He'd leave, start his own company that does influencer marketing, and then his old advertising firm would become its first big client. It was perfect. So Mark starts hiring and soon puts together a little team. And that includes executives, senior people with lots of experience in the marketing world, who he'd now have to get on board with his vision. And he immediately discovers that this is unlike anything he's ever tried before.
I was a senior director when I left to start this company. So very little managerial skills and background. Was used to leading a team of followers, people who believed in what I was doing and also what my senior executives at my former firms were doing. And now how to not only be the leader, but how to be the peacemaker into getting everybody aligned.
Now, let's not forget, Cogent is starting with some heavy-hitting clients. Corona, for example. Cogent comes up with this idea to send cases of Corona to any celebrity when they're hosting a birthday party, and that soon turns into Cogent creating more than 500 events a year for Corona. So we've got heavy dollars rolling in. That revenue thing from the beginning of the show is already happening. Little team, new leader, big revenue. And yet in that first year, Mark knows something isn't right at his company. People aren't having as much fun as they should. Clients are occasionally confused because they're hearing two different things from two different people at Cogent. But the revenue keeps coming in. So he figures, well, we're doing something right here.
Like any marriage, you don't realize that there's a problem until your kids are upset. And we started having an effect on some junior employees. One of our very key junior employees approached me that he either needs to resign or no longer report directly to certain people.
That was the wake-up call. A junior employee is so unhappy that he's ready to resign. And that's what forces Mark to take a hard look at what's happening at his company. He realizes that the problem is right there at the top. Mark had hired two very talented and experienced executives, but instead of coalescing into a leadership team, they were just ships passing in the night.
Instead of working either together or as the three of us, the communication would be siloed. What would happen would be we'd be calling the same vendors, we'd be calling similar clients. We would get two different prices from a vendor and agree to both of them. We would be working on a company like Procter & Gamble where there's so many different brands, yet we don't know that the left hand is not talking to the right, and we might be reaching out to similar people and crossing over.
And that same kind of siloing was happening internally too. These two executives simply wouldn't meet with each other, nor would they sit in a meeting with Mark together. Just imagine it. You have three leaders of a company and they won't all sit down and talk to each other. Instead, each of those two executives would only talk to Mark individually. And as Mark tries to puzzle through what's happening, he realizes the problem.
What we did was we tried to hire teams around those individuals so they had other people to work with instead of aligning them as, let's call it, co-heads. And building out a greater team.
Mark had hired two senior people, given them their own teams, and then set them off to make money for the company. And that ultimately meant that the two teams felt like they were in competition with each other. The leaders felt protective of their information. They weren't going to, say, talk about what price they'd gotten for a Procter & Gamble marketing program, because that just tipped their hand to the direct competitor down the hall. And then Mark started examining his own work style, because frankly, this kind of thing didn't just happen on its own, this dysfunction. Mark is the leader. If it's happening, it's happening because of him. And he realized something very difficult about himself.
You treat everybody, especially people that took a risk to leave their company to join you, you treat them with kid gloves. And so always being the senior director, never having to have those type of hard conversations, I wasn't very well experienced in meeting with people and honestly working with them in a healthy way. Some of the ways that I chose to communicate that was actually more destructive than it was, because it was more stern or more forcing and not actually sitting with those team members and saying, this is a problem that comes from the way that we behave and the way that certain people treat each other.
It's worth really reflecting on what Mark just said there. He didn't want to have hard conversations with his employees because he felt, well, like, you know, he didn't deserve to have hard conversations with them. They'd come to work for him. They'd taken a risk. And what was he going to do now? Order them around? But the fact of it is, the absence of leadership is the worst thing that a leader can provide. So Mark came clean. He pointed out the problem to his team. He apologized for his own leadership failures, and he asked that everyone really improve working together, improve that communication.
Once we were able to kind of recognize that, we were able to be a little bit more honest with each other. And from time to time, what we found was the more we communicated, the more we built a little bit more trust with each other. And the more that we, spoke with transparency, and the more that we went out of our way to make sure people were filled in, it slowly and surely got a little bit better. Fast forward to 2013, and we expand from 9 to 30 people, and the problem begins all over again.
Anyone who's scaled a company will tell you that growth can feel destabilizing. It's almost like after a while you're running a totally different company. And if you haven't established a strong culture, one that you can easily integrate new employees into, then chaos will reign. And here again, Mark sees himself as the one to blame. And he is just so amazingly open about this in a way that I think more leaders should be, that I want to just run a few minutes of our conversation here. So we were talking about what happened with the new managers that he'd hired.
What I found, unfortunately, was those leaders now started emulating my poor management style. Some of them picked up my bad habits. I tried to repeat a phrase I learned a long time ago. Someone gave me great advice. They said, I know you idolize your mentor and your CEO, but sometimes you have to watch what they do and learn to do the opposite. And don't be the one talking in the room, be the one watching people's reactions in the room and pick up the body language to do the opposite where it doesn't work. So I repeatedly, and I still say to this day, learn from my mistakes. My management style doesn't work for you, and you can't emulate me. We didn't come from the exact same DNA. So look at what I do well, try to make it better. Look at what I don't do well, and get it out of your management style.
That's good advice. That's hard advice to give.
It only happens when someone gives it to you, and when you can actually have the awareness and be conscious of the fact that while you think what you're doing is emulating somebody more successful, you're actually just being an asshole, if I'm allowed to curse on this.
No, you're allowed to curse on this. Yeah. Not FCC regulated.
Good. And really, that's what it was. It was a conversation with someone telling me, you're great, I love you, but you're an asshole. And it doesn't matter if you're an asshole, but the people under you are not only affected by it, but they're emulating it. And so to this day, it's like payback. They always say your kids are going to be payback to what you were. Well, also your team members and the people under you, they're going to be payback to the way that you manage them, and not only pay back to you, but to the people that they have to manage. And when you tell them this is not right, when I see a lot of my bad qualities in some of my team members, they look back at me with a smile and say, I learned it from you.
Mark has worked a lot on himself. Executive coaches, spiritual coaches. He said he could just keep naming coaches. And he's come to realize that he needs different coaches and different mentors for different stages of his business. So he considers himself a work in progress, always learning. And I suspect his willingness to be open about this part of the process is what will enable him to succeed through it. But while Mark's introspection can solve some problems, it can't cure all of what was ailing Cogent. The problems from the company's beginning still existed, but now just at a larger scale. More revenue, yes, but also more bad communication, more employees not meeting with each other, more leaders not working as a leadership team. What Cogent needed wasn't just better leadership, it needed better systems. And Mark realized that this starts with hiring. In the past, Mark had done pretty much all of the hiring himself. If a team inside Cogent needed someone new, for example, Mark would do the interviewing, pick the person he liked, and then deliver them to the team. Just, here you go, here's the person. And he thought he was being a hands-on leader this way. But it turns out that that just means that these new people would be immediately ostracized. They'd just show up to work and their colleagues would be like, who the hell are you?
I learned very quickly was going to only ensure that that person did not succeed.
So now it's different. First of all, Mark isn't managing the process. His team leaders are. Sometimes Mark won't even meet a new employee until they're in the office for the first day of work. And in order for Mark to step back like this, he needed to develop a system so that everyone could trust the process. And it goes like this. Cogent posts these very particular kind of job listings, which include fun little questions like whether you prefer Shake Shack or Chick-fil-A, which apparently is a debate in the Cogent office, or what their favorite song on the radio is right now. The point is, one, to see if applicants actually read and respond to them, but two, to get a little more personality up front. Applicants tend to write better, more thoughtful letters to Cogent as a result.
We then had a very quick criteria set. We reach out to them by email. If they don't respond within a few hours, they're out. We then set up a phone call with them versus bringing them into the office for an interview and taking up five people's day when they don't know why they're meeting with someone. And from the phone call, if they sent a follow-up email and we saw the level of professionalism that our executives were raised on, we then asked for some work samples and then brought them in for an interview. And we were able to kind of set up that process with everyone to say, anyone coming in for an interview must go through this process. Otherwise, they're not worthy to even have the opportunity to work here. It built a tremendous amount of trust in those executives when those interviewees came through the door. We also installed a referral bonus, a $500 plus referral bonus in the form of a gift card if you referred somebody that got the job. And so we learned that there's no better recommendation than a friend of a friend. And as we grew, we learned that because somebody came in through somebody else, they automatically had the trust of the greater team.
But how do all the teams work together? In the past, Mark thought it was a leadership problem. The senior people he'd hired weren't talking to each other, and they didn't really appreciate being told there's a better way to do things. So Mark changed his tactics.
We've spent a lot of time as getting the people that report into them to work very well across the board to make sure that at least the communication below them is fluid. And from there, we found that the leaders start to actually know more about what's going on by their teams filling them in than trying to worry about them getting with each other to fill in that data.
And then Mark discovered a great trick. A leader from one team may still feel competitive with a leader on another team, but if you can get the leader on Team A to help out one of the smaller guys on Team B, well, now you're starting to build serious goodwill.
We slowly try to find ways to get the other leadership to appreciate each other by getting them to help each other or by getting them to help people on the other team. For example, I may not love somebody, but if they do something very nice for my son, I become a big softy.
And maybe you're thinking, as I'm thinking, come on, Mark, at some point you just have to get rid of some of these people. It's great to try finding ways to make it work, but if someone simply isn't right for the organization, then they aren't right, even if they're talented, even if they're geniuses. Because talent and genius don't mean much if you can't actually work well with the person. And Mark says, yeah, he's gotten good at having hard conversations, but he doesn't like to fire people. So instead, he sits down and says, hey, you're not a right fit here, and this is why. So it's time to start looking for another job. And if you want our help, we'll give it to you. Seriously, we'll give it to you.
Some of those people, we called some of our partners and said, if you're looking for someone, this person's great. They're looking to move on. While they look to move on, they always have a job with us. If you are looking, we would do everything we can not only to endorse them, but support them when they get over to your organization.
All of which is well and good, but you know, when I started this episode, I began with the problem behind the problem. You might remember it. It wasn't communication and it wasn't hiring. It was revenue. Revenue made Mark look the other way on every problem. And so that revenue was the big thing to solve. But here's the thing about revenue, as Mark would come to find out. It wasn't just a distraction from the problems. It was also a creator of problems. So let's talk for a second about how that revenue was coming in. In the past, team members had all been given individual goals. So for example, Cogent had a talent and influence team, and there were two co-heads of that team, and each co-head had a different sales goal. The theory was that individual goals make people motivated and accountable, but individual goals also created secrecy. So even though the two co-heads of a team were working with the exact same numbers and often reaching out to the same clients, they weren't sharing contacts, they weren't sharing data, they weren't helping each other out. They were chasing dollars, and a dollar for you means a dollar less for me. That is deadly to corporate culture. So Mark changed it. No more individual goals in a team. Now it is just team goals.
We've gotten to a place where we've said revenue is revenue and it continues to grow, thank God. But at this point, nobody is bigger than our culture.
Today, Cogent is 30 people large. They're based in New York, but just opened an office in Los Angeles. And Mark is seeing all of these changes pay off in a big way. Today, he likes to refer to Cogent as the Hawaii of agencies. Showing up should feel like being on vacation every day, although vacation with very aggressive goals.
We have a very aggressive target of revenue growth of 30% every year. We've stayed on target with that, and we're less excited about the revenue growth because there's a lot of pressure we put on ourselves to achieve that. What we found is the time we spent on each project has dwindled, the amount of money we waste has dwindled, and ultimately the fact that we're communicating more, we're actually able to see not just revenue increasing, but the amount of clients we're working with expand because people's capacity has increased. Some of that capacity just allows them to go home.
Consider what we've learned about revenue here. It was the creator of Mark's problems. It exacerbated Mark's problems. But once he solved the problems, you know what he got? More revenue. And dare I say it, that's not a problem. And that's our show. Problem Solvers comes out every week. So to make sure that you don't miss an episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you love what we're doing, please also leave us a review. It totally helps us reach more people. That's our problem solving right here. And of course, there are a lot more stories like this one, along with practical advice on how to start and grow a business in Entrepreneur Magazine and on our website, entrepreneur.com. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Again, my name is Jason Pfeiffer, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Let me know what you think about the show. You can find me on Twitter at HeyPfeiffer, H-E-Y-F-E-I-F-E-R. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.